to be back on the line about 11 o'clock, and he said hopefully full power would be restored by about midnight. Hopefully, I stress, because he did. WCBS called Tudor City in New York City tonight. Tudor City on the east side of Manhattan. One of their telephone operators told us that their clock stopped at about 8:20 tonight after the Con Ed brownout and blackout started to spread. Elevator service at Tudor City at the same time came to a complete halt, as did all other equipment dependent on electricity. However, the telephone operator at Tudor City told us that the power started to come back on at about 9:30, which would be about 7 minutes ago. She also said that she was keeping her kerosene light on, just in case. And now let's go back to Jack Welby at the Empire State. Is that light still on, Jack?
Yes, George. As a matter of fact, it's official. At night, we had 9:34 p.m. The lights came back on again. Where I'm sitting, from my vantage point, I'm sort of off the lobby, so we're still in a pretty dark area, and I guess the lights are ordinarily turned off here. But one light came on in a little bookstore next door, and I went back onto the lobby. All the lights are on, and I glanced out on 34th Street, and the lights are back on again. I assume that the people who are up on the 102nd floor should be coming down momentarily. I'll try to get some report from them, but it seems to me at this point, from my vantage point, that everything should be pretty much back to normal.
Jack, are the elevators running?
That I don't know, George. As I say, from where I am now, I am not close to the elevators, so right as soon as I leave, I'm going to scoot over and see what I can get.
Fine. Jack Welby at the Empire State Building, where just noted that the lights are now coming on. They're also coming on, as we reported, from other sections of New York City as well. Channel 4, incidentally, has just gone back on the air. I'm looking at Channel 2 on a television monitor here in the WCBS News Radio studio. Channel 2, however, is not yet back on the air. We have been informed, though, that Channel 4, which is one of the VHF stations, all of which use the top of the Empire State Building, is now back on the air. So it seems, gradually at least, power is being restored in the Midtown Manhattan area.
George, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, Jack.
One other point I'd like to mention. There was a technician from CBS here in the lobby of the Empire State Building. He was attempting to get up the stairs to see if he could do something to remedy the situation, and I heard you say that Channel 4 is back on, so I imagine once he gets up and does whatever he has to do with his electronics gear, then I'm sure they will be back on very shortly.
I hope he's not planning to walk, Jack.
I hope not. I'm going to check the elevators now.
All right, Jack Welby at the Empire State Building. Incidentally, the floodlights, which light the upper floors of that building, have just gone on. Now we understand that Channel 2 just has gone on as I speak to you now. Channel 2 has gone back on the air, and so has Channel 4, 5, 7, 9, and 13. How's that for a count? I'll give that to you again. Television's back on now. That's one of our crises solved tonight. Channels 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, and 13. As power flickered back on just moments ago at the Empire State Building, where Jack Welby is on duty, and we'll be hearing from Jack again very shortly. He went to check the elevators. Presumably they're running now, too, with television back on. So it appears that that Mr. Luce's optimism was certainly warranted. Charles Luce, the chairman of the board of Con Ed, who within the hour said live on WCBS that the trouble had been isolated, that they were working feverishly, and that they hope to have the full power, normal power, restored in the affected area, which he stressed was central Manhattan, by about midnight tonight. Apparently he's done better than that, at least as far as television is concerned. As we say, the VHF channels now are back on. Gordon Barnes is in the Weather Center. Gordon, anything new to add to our problems tonight?
No, but I'd just like to pass on that an avid listener from the Tudor City area did call and say that in that particular area in which they're listening to WCBS radio, they have no power whatsoever. Of course, being such a large complex, maybe some buildings are on and some are off. But anyway, as far as the weather is concerned, boy, has the phone really been lighting up here recently. We've had reports of heavy thunderstorm activity as well as heavy snow from Madison, New Jersey, up to and including Ramsey, New Jersey, and all the way over to Rockland and Westchester County. On Nassau and Suffolk County, we have a mixture of rain and sleet. Here in Midtown Manhattan, a bunch of junk is the best way to put it. You take your choice. voice, and that's what you've got. The line of thunderstorms now located to the south of New York City will continue to pass over the city for the next few hours. Those thunderstorms at times will help to dump down, depending on where you are and the temperature at that time, either heavy rain or heavy snow, and then will slacken off somewhat. The winds will remain gusty throughout the night. The overnight temperatures will range between 28 and 34 degrees. The mixed precipitation should change over to an all-rain pattern by the commuter rush hour tomorrow morning, but since it will be locally heavy at times, some of the roads will be probably flooded, and we urge everyone to drive with extra caution. The overnight temperatures ranging between 28 and 34 degrees. In those areas to the north and west of the city, where it'll be snow before it changes over, some accumulations of 2 to 4 inches can be expected. Then for tomorrow, a cloudy and windy morning with the rain gradually ending, and during the afternoon hours, it will start turning colder. The high in the morning will range between 35 and 41 degrees, but by late afternoon, we'll be dropping down into the mid and upper 20s. Then on Tuesday, Old Man Winter will be back here, a day of variable cloudiness, cold temperatures with some scattered snow flurries, especially in the hilly sections to the north and west of New York City. The high on Tuesday will be in the 20s. So, recapping it very quickly, a wet, damp night outside, just about any kind of precipitation you want, including some scattered thunderstorms. And those thunderstorms, by the way, are accompanied by a very vivid display of lightning and strong winds. The overnight 28 to 34, turning colder tomorrow afternoon. And that's it for tonight, George.
Well, it looks like we've got plenty of natural electrical power out there, Gordon.
Wouldn't it be great if we could take that and capture it somehow and store it up and then use it?
I know a chap who would certainly like to know.
Yeah, I know.
His name is Charles Luce.
Luce, right.
Con Ed tonight. But apparently the power crisis, such as it was, is over, Gordon, as you no doubt know. Television is back on the air, which solves apparently a possible social crisis in the New York metropolitan area.
I, you know, there's another figure that I would like to be able to determine tonight. How many people turned to their radios at that point and what our audience listener number was for tonight. I'm quite sure, based on the phone calls I'm getting here, we certainly have a lot of listeners out there, and they're very helpful, too, in phoning in this information to us, and, of course, we are very appreciative of it.
Gordon Barnes. Gordon Barnes, chief meteorologist on duty at the WCBS Weather Center. It's 15 before the hour of 10 now. Incidentally, Channel 11 seems to be the only New York City television station still off the air at this moment, though several haven't yet resumed actual programming yet, just test patterns and such. Apparently, the problem at Channel 11 is that their studios are also in the affected area, and they may not yet have power at the studios, although they may very well have power as the other VHF channels do at Empire State Building. We're checking with them now, and of course we'll let you know what the situation is as soon as we can find that out. Still so, some areas, according to last report, Tudor City for one, Gordon mentioned that, we mentioned that earlier. There are some sections of Midtown Manhattan which still do not have full power at this moment, although Charles Luce, the chairman of the board of Con Ed, said that he hoped to have full power back by midnight tonight. But most, in fact, all of the VHF television channels, with the exception of Channel 11, and that includes 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, and 13, are back on the air. It's rather interesting that that what goes on, or in the case of an electrical power failure, what doesn't go on in a small geographic area of this country can produce problems and crises out of all dimension to at least its geographic size. Of course, that is not any geographic area. It's Midtown Manhattan where it affected. The telephone company is operating still on its emergency power supply, its diesel power, and although it says that its service is continuing unaffected, it is still urging its customers to keep their calls down to just emergencies and to keep their conversations where they are necessary very brief in order not to strain the system. Hospitals, according to all those that we were able to check, tell us that the only problems there for the most part have been the fact that they weren't able to get television. Of course, that's not the case now. Within the last few minutes, television has been restored, with the exception of Channel 11 in the New York City area. The trains, that situation is normal, with the exception of the Penn Central's trains using Grand Central Terminal. Penn Station was not affected at all. It apparently was just outside of that Midtown area that was affected by these scattered power failures. Kennedy and LaGuardia airports, of course, were not affected at all. They may be a little affected tonight by all that weather that Gordon has forecasting coming our way. In fact, there is a combination of rain and sleet in many sections of New York City tonight. Traffic lights, of course, in much of the Midtown area were affected on and off again. What was true on one street corner was not necessarily true on another. Elevators were stalled. However, the service is coming back slowly. Empire State Building, the lights are on there now, as Jack Welby, our man down there, noted just about 15 or 20 minutes ago. And, of course, the biggest and most dramatic demonstration of that is the fact that all of the VHF New York City television stations are now back on the air. They all use the top of that Empire State Building as transmitting towers. All with the exception, we should say, of course, of Channel 11 to this moment. And the reason that may be is because Channel 11 has its studios in the affected area, too. Unlike the residents in Tudor City on the east side, those in Peter Cooper Village in the east 20s are faring much better during the current combination of black and brownouts. WCBS has learned from the chief engineer that in one building only is elevator service out. In one building only. The other 29 buildings of that Peter Cooper Village complex are reported as having elevator service, even though the lights are dimming at irregular intervals. Earlier tonight, Tudor City reported severe elevator and power difficulties. So that's another interesting sidelight, if I may use a very bad pun, that Tudor City has severe elevator and power difficulties, while Peter Cooper Village, which really isn't that far away, is having a very minor problem. Only one elevator or only one building is experiencing elevator service in a complex that houses 29 buildings. But that seems to be the story. There are people who are losing power in some sections of Midtown Manhattan, and without any particular pattern either to the way they're losing it, while in other cases, such as the Empire State Building, where power was initially out at 7:14 tonight, at about 9:30, about 20 minutes ago, power was restored. We'll be keeping you posted, of course. Charles Luce, the chairman of the board of Con Ed, told us, as you may have heard, that the trouble, of course, has been isolated, that the crews have been working extra to try and fix up the problem just as quickly as possible. And interestingly enough, Mr. Luce himself wasn't altogether that sure of just what did happen. There was an explosion, he told us, in one transformer at the Waterside Generating Station. Perhaps, he said, it may have been in two transformers. But they're getting that generating station back on the line, and he expects, hopefully, he stresses, that everything could be normal power-wise in the affected area, which is central Manhattan, by midnight tonight, which is 2 hours and 10 minutes away from now. It's 10 minutes before 10 at this hour. Before power went back on at the Empire State Building, police of the West 35th Street Station rescued a number of sightseers who were stranded on the 102nd floor and the 86th floor observatories using an emergency-powered elevator. So they did have at least one elevator at the Empire State Building, which was working during that power blackout there, and which, as we just noted, the police report that they rescued a number of sightseers who were left stranded in probably the highest perch anywhere, the 86th and 102nd floor of the Empire State Building tonight. As we mentioned earlier, within the half hour, the VHF television stations, all of the New York City VHF television stations, and we assume this also goes for a number of the FM stations, many of which have their broadcasting facilities on top of that giant structure down there at 5th Avenue and the 30th, 34th Street, 33rd Street block, that they, too, are taking to the air. All of the VHF television stations are now back on the air in New York City, with the notable and singular exception of Channel 11, which, as we noted, also has the studio facilities also in the central Manhattan area. Briefly recapping the weather, which may turn out before this night is over to be more of a problem for New Yorkers than the power situation. It is raining and sleeting in sections of New York City, and as Gordon Barnes noted about 10 or 15 minutes ago, it'll be cloudy and windy with snow and sleet and even freezing rain, gradually changing to all rain during the night, says Gordon. There will be some accumulation of snow and ice likely in the normally colder suburbs. The roads will be slippery, and there's also a chance of scattered thunderstorms accompanied by strong winds and locally heavy rain. Overnight lows will range from 28 to 34. It's 35 at last report in Central Park under gusty winds. Tomorrow will be cloudy and windy with the rain ending and turning colder in the afternoon, highs of 35 to 41. And incidentally, Gordon indicated that the precipitation should be largely rain by rush hour time tomorrow. Outlook for Tuesday, says Gordon, variable cloudiness and cold with snow flurries and a high in the 20s. We have an unconfirmed report that power went out in Midland Park, New Jersey, just as it was going back on at the Empire State Building. If true, this is probably just a coincidence, but we're checking on it now. We'll let you know as soon as we do. Of course, Con Ed insists that the power outages have affected only the central Midtown Manhattan area, and of course have affected it in a very patchwork quilt type of pattern, with the little pattern at all to it. Channel 11, as we say, seems to be the only New York City TV station which is still off the air at this hour. The only other VHFs in New York City, channels 2, 4, 5, 6, 2, 4, 5, 7, I should say, 9 and 13, are all back on the air. And I understand, well, I'm looking at it now, channel 11, just as I speak to you. They came on with what appears to be a test pattern at this point, as soon as the set gets adjusted. So all of the VHF New York City stations, as of now, 7 minutes before 10, are all back on the air. As we say, in some cases, they're showing just test patterns and the like, but they are back on. Those are channels 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11, and 13. Reporting the New York Telephone Company, the says that it's using diesel emergency power still. Service was not affected, though, because of the power blackouts in some sections of Manhattan. But it's urging its customers still tonight, even at this hour, to confine their calls to emergencies and where they are necessary to keep the conversations very brief in order to conserve emergency power. Repeating, as far as the transportation system is concerned in the metropolitan area, the airports, of course, are not affected. Train service, however, out of Grand Central Terminal, according to Penn Central, is affected only in that it is running a little slower than usual. Many of their signals are out on the tracks going north into Westchester and on into Connecticut and Providence and Boston. And so they're having to use flagmen and hand signals and just rolling down the window and shouting up at the towers to determine if the tracks are clear ahead. But the train service in and out of Penn Station, and that, of course, not only means Penn Central trains to Washington, for instance, and points in New Jersey, but also the Long Island Railroad, that, we are told, is normal. As for the subways, there have been reports of delays on the IND and IRT lines, principally in mid-Manhattan. We have another report from a man at Park Avenue and 37th Street that that area, which had power up till a short while ago, lost it entirely as of a few minutes ago. We aren't sure just yet how large an area of Manhattan is still affected, but we do know that the Murray Hill area is still completely blacked out. Again, repeating, the problem has been isolated to the waterside generating station, which is near the United Nations on the east side of mid-Manhattan, the result of, according to Charles Luce, the chairman of the board of Con Ed, result of an isolated explosion in either one or two of the transformers at that plant. He wasn't exactly sure how many were affected, but he said that the waterside generating station is being put back on the line now, and it comes back in bits and stages, which may explain the kind of almost nonsense-appearing way that the power is restored, and in some cases drops out in sections of this mid-Manhattan area. It may explain why the patchwork quilt kind of operation is going on. But nevertheless, this is what we probably can expect between now and the time that full power is restored, according to Mr. Luce, hopefully around midnight tonight, which is just a couple of hours away. A listener on 2nd Avenue says that the avenue is blacked out from 40th Street right down to 34th Street at the moment. And she says the only lights visible are candles. That's an area from 40th Street, according to this listener, right down to 34th Street. The United Press International reports that its operations in the city are shut down. It says that everything has been out since 9:13 p.m. Of course, that's a facility that's in the Midtown area as well. And interestingly enough, to demonstrate the kind of scattered patterns to these brownouts and blackouts, we might mention that the presses of the New York Daily News, which are near the United Nations tonight, shut down about 7:30, which is about 20 minutes after this explosion occurred at the waterside plant, whereas across town by several blocks, the presses of the New York Times were unaffected. Another interesting aspect. As we say, the Kennedy and LaGuardia airports report their operations have not been affected. The subways have experienced delays, we're told, on the IND and IRT lines in Midtown Manhattan. In the midst of all of this, you may be wondering why we're on the air and unaffected, and that's because our transmitter, unlike many of the transmitters, particularly the VHF television transmitters in New York City, are not atop the Empire State Building. They're rather out on a little island called High Island on Long Island Sound. The weather at 2 minutes before the hour of 10 o'clock, two before the hour, is a little bit of everything. Raining and sleeting in the New York City area. Our temperature, 35 degrees. Blustery winds out of the northeast to 17 miles an hour. Gust to 35. And we do have a wind chill factor. It feels 23 degrees. Humidity is a sticky 96%. The barometer is 30 inches even, and she's falling. And Gordon Barnes, the chief meteorologist on duty at the WCBS Weather Center, is forecasting a little bit of everything. Cloudy and windy with snow, sleet, and freezing rain tonight, gradually changing to all rain during the night. There'll be some accumulation of snow and ice, likely in normally colder suburbs, and roads will be slippery. Also, there's a chance of scattered thunderstorms accompanied by strong winds and locally heavy rain. Lows overnight of 28 to 34. Tomorrow, says Gordon, it'll be cloudy and windy with the rain ending, turning colder in the afternoon, highs of 35 to 41. The outlook for Tuesday, variable cloudiness, cold with snow flurries, and a high in the 20s. Katona, New York has a temperature of 34 degrees, and Rowayton, Connecticut has a temperature of 36 degrees. Repeating again for you, the Con Ed combination of brownouts and blackouts in the mid-Manhattan area is still pretty much of a patchwork problem, where in some cases, for instance, the VHF television stations in New York City are now back on the air, as power was restored about half an hour ago to the Empire State Building in Midtown Manhattan, which of course houses their antennae on its rooftop. But in other sections of the city, power hasn't been restored, and in some cases we have reports of power actually going out as Con Ed struggles to restore full power to the Midtown Manhattan area as a result of scattered brownouts and blackouts caused by an explosion about 7:10 tonight in one or two transformers of Con Ed's waterside generating station, which is located in Midtown on the east side at 1st Avenue and 40th Street.
CBS in New York, WCBS News Radio 88.
This is George Redding. Con Ed black and brownouts snarls life in Manhattan, especially on the east side. That power problem apparently caused by an explosion in the Con Ed generator on the east side. Because of the power problems, the Empire State Building lost power, knocking out television broadcasting in New York City for nearly 3 hours. Con Ed, chairman of the board, Charles Luce, says hopefully things will be back to normal by midnight. Apollo 14 makes a private television broadcast tonight to Mission Control in Houston. Israeli Premier Golda Meir reportedly prepared to tell Egypt no troop withdrawals from the canal unless part of peace agreement. This is continuous news from CBS. At the tone, exactly 10 o'clock.
CBS News, Bob Schieffer reporting on the CBS radio network. A major power failure in New York tonight. A report on the situation at this hour from CBS News correspondent Robert Shackney.
A failure in an East River generating plant early this evening blacked out portions of Midtown Manhattan and knocked all of New York City's television stations off the air for 2.5 hours. Television is now back on the air, but the Consolidated Edison Company is still having difficulties getting electricity to other sections of the city, including the prosperous Murray Hill and Grand Central districts. The utility blames a failure on a transformer bank for the power failure. The problem tonight came after a week of electric power cutbacks in the city because of difficulties with a number of major generating plants, which in turn had prevented maintenance on the generators that were working. Robert Shackney, CBS News, New York.
And we'll have the latest on Apollo 14 after this message.
Come take a trip in my airship. We'll follow the man in the moon.
Hi, this is Max Morath, and that's a turn of the century ditty reflecting an event that changed the world in those days, the flight of the Wright brothers in 1903. Well, not many of us can change the world in such a big way, but maybe you'd like to change the world and help destitute people help themselves. You can, you know, through CARES International Partnership Plan. Destitute people in underdeveloped countries become self-supporting. Their governments share costs of CARE projects. The needy contribute their labor. CARE provides tools, equipment, know-how. The result? People grow food and build schools, roads, water supply systems, and health centers. Join this partnership for human betterment. Help change the world. Send dollars to CARE.
The Apollo 14 astronauts are heading home tonight, working at a leisurely pace on various experiments. They are in good spirits. They say they're in great shape. They're looking forward to splashdown on Tuesday afternoon, Eastern Standard Time. In New York today, former Senator Eugene McCarthy also had some comments on the space program. He told Ben Silver and other reporters that he's not convinced it's worth all the time and effort.
Most of what's worthwhile could have been discovered by concentrated experimentation, particularly with vacuums and so on, at much less expense and under better controlled conditions here on Earth.
Was there anything about Apollo 14 that stands out in your mind?
Well, the only thing that's different, as I see it, are those two lost golf balls. See, the rest of it's pretty much the same. It's quantitatively a little different. They brought back more rocks, but T.S. Eliot had that poem about our civilization, the paved roads and the 1,000 lost golf balls, and that there are now two more.
As the astronauts headed home tonight, they beamed a plea from the spaceship for peace in the world and continued space exploration to benefit all mankind. Pope Paul said today that the astronauts have demonstrated that man is king of the earth and prince of the heavens, but he said exploration of space shows the presence of God as the creative principle of the universe. Democratic Senator Frank Church, appearing on the CBS broadcast Face the Nation, said today he will seek a resolution in the Senate which would declare that all actions by the United States in Indochina have but one aim, a complete American withdrawal from the war. He said he hoped that the administration would back such a proposal to bring unity to the country once again. Senator Edmund Muskie said on ABC that he does not favor American support for a South Vietnamese drive into Laos. Muskie said U.S. actions in Indochina have now gone far beyond the stated objective to cut off enemy supplies before they reach South Vietnam. Still no word on whether South Vietnamese troops will move into Laos in force, but there has been a step up of enemy activity in the northwest corner of South Vietnam, where a huge Allied force is now massed. The U.S. command in Saigon says three American soldiers were killed and one was injured when they were struck by a North Vietnamese force of unknown size about 8 miles northwest of Saigon. More news in a minute.
The cold is more intense in winter when the wind is blowing. The Commerce Department's National Weather Service has found that strong winds cause a pronounced increase in the chilling effect of low temperatures. In a 20-mile-an-hour wind, a temperature of 20 degrees above zero becomes the bitter equivalent of 9 degrees below zero. Increase the winds to 35 miles an hour, and the effect would be equal to a frigid minus 20 degrees. Protection against frostbite is necessary in this kind of wind-driven cold, and face and hands should be kept covered. For maximum insulation against the cold, wear several layers of tightly woven light clothing. This is better for trapping and retaining body heat than a single layer of thick clothing. Remember that wind speed is an important part of your National Weather Service's winter forecasts. When the outlook is for a combination of cold and wind, bundle up for safety's sake.
Violence in North Ireland moved into its sixth day today as rioters in Londonderry battled British troops, attacked a police post, and hijacked two buses. This additional note on Indochina, they have located the missing Laotian general who disappeared from his headquarters in Long Chin. He has turned up in Bangkok saying one of his wives is taken ill. He wants her to see a doctor. Meanwhile, back at the headquarters, it's said that North Vietnamese troops are massing for an attack. No word from the general on when he'll be able to return to oversee the defense of his command post. This is Bob Schieffer, CBS News.
Now, let's find out. Tonight's examination of tomorrow's news story. Here is Dick Reeves, WCBS Director of News and Special Broadcasts.
Good evening. Our guest, Herbert Stern, U.S. Attorney for New Jersey. Joining me in asking questions, WCBS political reporter Steve Flanders. Mr. Stern, seems to be some concern, possibly, about the way in which you got your job, the origination of your appointment. Could you explain that? Normally, the appointment comes from a president. In this case, it did not.
Well, when there's a vacancy in the office of United States Attorney, and if the president has not yet acted to fill that vacancy, under the United States Code, the district court for the district can and does fill the post of United States Attorney. In my case, the judges of the district court for the District of New Jersey met and voted, and they selected me to fill it. I'm deeply gratified and honored because, these are judges before whom I've worked, tried cases, and Their selection of me is very meaningful to me personally.
Is there anything in the nature of the temporary about this form of appointment? Do you feel like you're a temporary U.S. attorney?
Well, I'm of course cognizant of the fact that I'm the U.S. attorney until such time as the president selects his choice for United States attorney. In that sense, it's temporary. All things are temporary, however. Even when the president appoints, it's temporary because it's for 4 years. My term as a court appointee does not have a specific term, but I intend to carry on day by day the same as Mr. Lacey, now Judge Lacey, and I have been carrying on for the past 17 months.
You think this has any effect on your approach to programs, on your approach to attacks on crime, for example? Are you able to take the long-term view?
Well, absolutely. I take the long-term view because there's no other way to intelligently act in the office. It would be an abrogation of my duties, even as court-appointed United States attorney, for me to do anything else. As a matter of fact, today I announced the appointment of Jonathan Goldstein, formerly the head of our criminal division, as Chief Assistant United States Attorney for the District of New Jersey, and on Monday I'll be announcing the appointment of a Chief of the Criminal Division for our office as well. We're going to continue just as we have been continuing.
Mr. Stern, are you getting the support and cooperation from New Jersey state law enforcement people, like the new State Attorney General and the county state generals that have been set in, that you need? Are you getting that?
I've been very much impressed by Attorney General Kugler. He and Governor Cahill, I think, have done a remarkable thing in a short time. One of the first things that the state people did, which was very impressive, was to by and large abolish the part-time prosecutors in the major counties. Up until the governor took office and Attorney General Kugler took office, there was a part-time prosecutor in almost throughout the state. That means that in your heavily populated counties, the prosecuting attorney was permitted to practice law as well, privately that is, as well as be prosecuting attorney. I think one of the most significant things that they did was to abolish that and make these positions full-time. And as far as the work of the State Commission of Investigations is concerned, that's been just exemplary. Due to their efforts, you have men like Angelo Bruno in jail. You have men like Gerardo Cantina in jail. I think that their efforts have been substantial.
Now, how important are the voluntarily offered information that's been in your anti-crime drive? Do you find that these convictions stimulate the public to come forward and give you information that you need?
Yes, Steve. I think the most significant thing that occurred in the past 17 months was the conviction last July in the Adnesio case. I can't say that, you know, the difference is night and day, but there is a substantial difference. There's a different attitude in the public. Indictments are important, but convictions are what count. And now that the public has seen that even the mayor of the largest city of New Jersey can be brought to trial and can be convicted, along with the organized crime elements in which he had joined forces, when they see that, then they feel as though they have a chance. And you know, because I'm sure both of you gentlemen have watched enough trials and investigations to know, that if you don't get witnesses, you just can't get convictions.
Are there, you mentioned Newark and what was accomplished there, and there are other cases pending. Are there other pockets of corruption in New Jersey which are going to be the target of your office? Do you think that New Jersey is a state which continues to be, in some places, controlled by organized crime?
I think one of the problems in answering the question is, what do we mean by organized crime exactly? There's a problem of definition. Do you mean, is there political corruption elsewhere? I think anybody who would say that there is no political corruption elsewhere is at best naive, if not deliberately naive. We have other investigations going on in the office, but I don't think it's appropriate for me to detail what they are. My function is not to accuse by the media but to bring evidence before grand juries, which we're doing, to return indictments through them, and to try them to a successful conclusion. That's what we've been doing for 17 months, and that's what we're going to keep on doing.
Is the scale upon which you believe this corruption exists as large as the scale you found in your other investigation?
Well, my problem there...